February 18th. Our reading in the Old Testament today will be from the book of Leviticus, chapter 6, verse 1. We'll go through chapter 7, verse 27. Here's a brief overview of what we'll find there. We'll be following the example of the priest, and each morning we get rid of the old ashes. We stir up the fire, and we offer a burnt offering to the Lord. Well, the phrase stir up means to stir up the flame into life again. And don't we have to do that even today? Is the flame burning high on the altar of your heart? Or are you getting lukewarm? Let's also keep the leaven out of our lives, which includes hypocrisy and corrupt living. The sin offering was so holy that it could not remain in the defiled camp. It had to be taken outside the camp. Now the priests were permitted to eat their share, but only in the holy court of the tabernacle, because whatever the offering touched was made holy. Fellowship with God and one another depends on purity. And with that, let's begin our reading today here in the Old Testament. February 18th, Leviticus chapter 6, verse 1, through chapter 7, verse 27. And the Lord said to Moses, suppose some of the people sin against the Lord by falsely telling their neighbor that an item entrusted to their safekeeping has been lost or stolen. Or suppose they have been dishonest with regard to a security deposit, or they have taken something by theft or extortion. Or suppose they find a lost item and lie about it, or they deny something while under oath, or they commit any other similar sin. If they have sinned in any of these ways and are guilty, they must give back whatever they have taken by theft or extortion, whether a security deposit or property entrusted to them, or a lost object that they claimed as their own, or anything gained by swearing falsely. When they realize their guilt, they must restore the principal amount plus a penalty of 20% to the person they have harmed. They must then bring a guilt offering to the priest, who will present it before the Lord. This offering must be a ram with no physical defects, or the animal's equivalent value in silver. The priest will then make atonement for them before the Lord, and they will be forgiven. Then the Lord said to Moses, give Aaron and his sons the following instructions regarding the whole burnt offering. The burnt offering must be left on the altar until the next morning, and the altar fire must be kept burning all night. The next morning, after dressing in his special linen clothing and undergarments, the priest on duty must clean out the ashes of the burnt offering and put them beside the altar. Then he must change back into his normal clothing and carry the ashes outside the camp to a place that is ceremonially clean. Meanwhile, the fire on the altar must be kept burning. It must never go out. Each morning the priest will add fresh wood to the fire and arrange the daily whole burnt offering on it. He must then burn the fat of the peace offerings on top of this daily whole burnt offering. Remember, the fire must be kept burning on the altar at all times. It must never go out. These are the instructions regarding the grain offering. Aaron's sons must present this offering to the Lord in front of the altar. The priest on duty will take a handful of the choice flour that has been mixed with olive oil and sprinkled with incense. He will burn this token portion on the altar, and it will be very pleasing to the Lord. After burning this handful, the rest of the flour will belong to Aaron and his sons for their food. It must, however, be baked without yeast and eaten in a sacred place, within the courtyard of the tabernacle. Remember, this flour may never be prepared with yeast. I have given it to the priests as their share of the offerings presented to me by fire. Like the sin offering and the guilt offering, it is most holy. Any of Aaron's male descendants from generation to generation may eat of the grain offering, because it is their regular share of the offerings given to the Lord by fire. Anyone or anything that touches this food will become holy. And the Lord said to Moses, On the day Aaron and his sons are anointed, they must bring to the Lord a grain offering of 2 quarts of choice flour, half to be offered in the morning and half to be offered in the evening. It must be cooked on a griddle with olive oil, and it must be well mixed and broken into pieces. You must present this grain offering, and it will be very pleasing to the Lord. As the sons of the priests replace their fathers, they will be inducted into office by offering this same sacrifice on the day they are anointed. It is the Lord's regular share, and it must be completely burned up. All such grain offerings of the priests must be entirely burned up. None of the flour may be eaten. Then the Lord said to Moses, Give Aaron and his sons these further instructions regarding the sin offering. The animal given as a sin offering is most holy, and must be slaughtered in the Lord's presence at the place where the burnt offerings are slaughtered. The priest who offers the sacrifice may eat his portion in a sacred place within the courtyard of the tabernacle. Anything or anyone who touches the sacrificial meat will become holy. And if the sacrificial blood splatters anyone's clothing, it must be washed off in a sacred place. If a clay pot is used to boil the sacrificial meat, it must be broken. If a bronze kettle is used, it must be scoured and rinsed thoroughly with water. Only males from a priest's family may eat of this offering, for it is most holy. If, however, the blood of a sin offering has been taken into the tabernacle to make atonement in the holy place for the people's sins, none of that animal's meat may be eaten. It must be completely burned up. These are the instructions for the guilt offering, which is most holy. The animal sacrificed as a guilt offering must be slaughtered where the burnt offerings are slaughtered, and its blood sprinkled against the sides of the altar. The priest will then offer all its fat on the altar, including the fat from the tail, the fat around the internal organs, the 2 kidneys with the fat around them near the loins, and the lobe of the liver, which is to be removed with the kidneys. The priests will burn these parts on the altar as an offering to the Lord made by fire. It is a guilt offering. All males from a priest's family may eat the meat, and it must be eaten in a sacred place, for it is most holy. For both the sin offering and the guilt offering, the meat of the sacrificed animal belongs to the priest in charge of the atonement ceremony. In the case of the whole burnt offering, the hide of the sacrificed animal also belongs to the priest. Any grain offering that has been baked in an oven, prepared in a pan, or cooked on a griddle belongs to the priest who presents it. All other grain offerings, whether flour mixed with olive oil or dry flour, are to be shared among all the priests and their sons. These are the instructions regarding the different kinds of peace offerings that may be presented to the Lord. If you present your peace offering as a thanksgiving offering, the usual animal sacrifice must be accompanied by various kinds of bread, loaves, wafers, and cakes, all made without yeast and soaked with olive oil. This peace offering of thanksgiving must also be accompanied by loaves of yeast bread. One of each kind of bread must be presented as a gift to the Lord. This bread will then belong to the priest who sprinkles the altar with blood from the sacrificed animal. The animal's meat must be eaten on the same day it is offered. None of it may be saved for the next morning. However, if you bring an offering to fulfill a vow or as a free will offering, the meat may be eaten on that same day, and whatever is left over may be eaten on the second day. But anything left over until the third day must be completely burned up. If any of the meat from this peace offering is eaten on the third day, it will not be accepted by the Lord. It will have no value as a sacrifice, and you will receive no credit for bringing it as an offering. By then, the meat will be contaminated. If you eat it, you will have to answer for your sin. meat that touches anything ceremonially unclean may not be eaten. It must be completely burned up. And as for meat that may be eaten, it may only be eaten by people who are ceremonially clean. Anyone who is ceremonially unclean but eats meat from a peace offering that was presented to the Lord must be cut off from the community. If anyone touches anything that is unclean, whether it is human defilement or an unclean animal, and then eats meat from the Lord's sacrifices, that person must be cut off from the community. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Give the Israelites these instructions. You must never eat fat, whether from oxen or sheep or goats. The fat of an animal found dead or killed by a wild animal may never be eaten, though it may be used for any other purpose. Anyone who eats fat from an offering given to the Lord by fire must be cut off from the community. Even in your homes, you must never eat the blood of any bird or animal. Anyone who eats blood must be cut off from the community." February 18th. And now, as we turn our attention to the reading of the New Testament, our narrative will come from the book of Mark, chapter 3, verses 7 through 30. Some assist the servant. You'll remember last time we were together, we began by telling you that some resist the servant. Well, here, some assist the servant. The crowds were so large that Jesus had to empower his disciples to help him in ministry. There is a job for everyone, even if only giving him a little boat to use. If you want to assist him, remember that the most important thing is being with him. As he said, "Without me, you can do nothing." You may recall when Jesus raised Lazarus from the dead. There were those even there who assisted him. Presumably, he was buried with that stone rolled across his grave. Jesus had to wait for them to warm up the pitch, which of course had hardened by that time. They had to warm it up so it would become liquefied again, so they could wipe it away and then roll the stone away. The Bible doesn't tell us how long that process took. We can imagine it took at least a couple of hours while the crowd stood around and while Jesus waited for those who were assisting him to remove that stone. The principle here is, of course, that Jesus, who alone can save, does not choose to save alone. He allows us to assist him. And then there are some mistrust also. Some mistrust the servant. Mary bore other children after the birth of Jesus, but they did not believe in him. Even his mother seemed to have doubts about her very popular son who was arousing the anger of the leaders. But Jesus was doing the will of God, and so should we. And with that, let's begin our reading today here in the New Testament. February 18th, Mark chapter 3, verses 7 through 30. Jesus and his disciples went out to the lake, followed by a huge crowd from all over Galilee, Judea, Jerusalem, Idumea, from east of the Jordan River, and even from as far away as Tyre and Sidon. The news about his miracles had spread far and wide, and vast numbers of people came to see him for themselves. Jesus instructed his disciples to bring around a boat and to have it ready in case he was crowded off the beach. There had been many healings that day. As a result, many sick people were crowding around him trying to touch him. And whenever those possessed by evil spirits caught sight of him, they would fall down in front of him shrieking, "You are the Son of God!" But Jesus strictly warned them not to say who he was. Afterward, Jesus went up on a mountain and called the ones he wanted to go with him, and they came to him. Then he selected 12 of them to be his regular companions, calling them apostles. He sent them out to preach, and he gave them authority to cast out demons. These are the names of the 12 he chose: Simon, he renamed him Peter, James and John, the sons of Zebedee, but Jesus nicknamed them Sons of Thunder, Andrew, Philip, Bartholomew, Matthew, Thomas, James, son of Alphaeus, Thaddeus, Simon the Zealot, Judas Iscariot, who later betrayed him. When Jesus returned to the house where he was staying, the crowds began to gather again, and soon he and his disciples couldn't even find time to eat. When his family heard what was happening, they tried to take him home with them. "He's out of his mind," they said. But the teachers of religious law who had arrived from Jerusalem said, "He's possessed by Satan, the prince of demons. That's where he gets the power to cast out demons." Jesus called them over and said to them by way of illustration, "How can Satan cast out Satan? A kingdom at war with itself will collapse. A home divided against itself is doomed. And if Satan is fighting against himself, how can he stand? He would never survive. Let me illustrate this. You can't enter a strong man's house and rob him without first tying him up. Only then can his house be robbed. I assure you that any sin can be forgiven, including blasphemy. But anyone who blasphemes against the Holy Spirit will never be forgiven. It is an eternal sin." He told them this because they were saying he had an evil spirit. Psalm 37, verses 1 through 11. This psalm shares the wisdom of an old man who had walked with the Lord. He had battled with evil and knew the frustration of seeing the wicked prosper and the righteous suffer. As he reviewed the past, he gave some wise counsel to keep us from fretting against the Lord when things are not going the way we want them to go. Trust in the Lord. That's the first principle. If you walk by sight and not by faith, well, you'll find it easy to fret. The wicked seem to be prospering, but they will not last. Believe what God says in His Word, because that is where you find reality. Second principle is delight in the Lord. Find all your joy and pleasure in His will. Knowing His will and doing it, make Him your delight. And guess what? Your desires will be in His will. Living to please the Lord sets you free from fretting about what men are doing. Next principle is commit your way to the Lord. You'll find all these principles I'm mentioning here in this passage of Scripture today. Commit your way to the Lord. When you trust Him and delight in Him, how could you do anything other than commit your way to Him? Let God guide your steps. Choose your joys, protect your name, and bless your work. Let God do all of that. It bears repeating. Let God guide your steps, choose your joys, protect your name, and bless your work. And then rest in the Lord. Restlessness is an evidence of unbelief. Faith rests in the Lord and enjoys the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding. God sometimes waits in answering prayer so that He might strengthen our patience. Psalm 37, verses 1 through 11, a psalm of David. Don't worry about the wicked. Don't envy those who do wrong. For like grass, they soon fade away. Like springtime flowers, they soon wither. Trust in the Lord and do good. Then you will live in safety in the land and prosper. Take delight in the Lord, and He will give you your heart's desires. Commit everything you do to the Lord. Trust Him, and He will help you. He will make your innocence as clear as the dawn, and the justice of your cause will shine like the noonday sun. Be still in the presence of the Lord, and wait patiently for Him to act. Don't worry about evil people who prosper, or fret about their wicked schemes. Stop your anger. Turn from your rage. Do not envy others. It only leads to harm, for the wicked will be destroyed. But those who trust in the Lord will possess the land. In a little while, the wicked will disappear. Though you look for them, they will be gone. Those who are gentle and lowly will possess the land. They will live in prosperous security. Proverbs chapter 10, verses 3 and 4. The Lord will not let the godly starve to death, but he refuses to satisfy the craving of the wicked. Lazy people are soon poor. Hard workers get rich.